Hi there, this is Brian Kaplan. I'm the Chief Revenue Officer at Theropass, and you're listening to the Disco Posse Podcast.
You're listening to the Disco Posse Podcast.
See, the microphone gives you away. You know what you're doing. You've done this before, Brian. So this is awesome. I'm really greatly appreciative for you to take time today. You have such an interesting role at such an interesting company with an interesting challenge. Not at the technology layer as much as the human layer. And I think the thing that I'm really interested in, we're going to talk about the science of selling compliance. And there's a lot of interesting challenges around going to market with something that's related to compliance and technology. And we have a lot of marketing and go-to-market people that are listening. And this is often one of the biggest challenges. Your ideal customer profile is seven personas at 17 different types of companies. This is wild. It's very difficult to do what you do, and yet you're executing. So we're gonna go to school at the class of Brian today. But Theropass is really cool. You're fantastic. And for folks that are brand new to you, Brian, you want to give a quick intro about yourself, your background, and then we'll talk about the Theropass story.
Yeah, happy to. And thank you for having me. So I have been in sales and sales leadership roles for 25 plus years. You can tell by the gray in my beard. I cut my teeth at the corporate executive board, often called CEB, now part of Gartner. If you know the Challenger sale, it's that organization. Phenomenal place to learn the art of selling. I spent about 10 years there in the US and then in the UK as an individual contributor and then ultimately a sales leader. Wonderful learning ground for selling to C-level execs at enterprise companies. After that, I ended up at a company called Axiom Law, one of the early quote-unquote disruptors in the legal industry, venture-backed company. I joined in the UK in 2010, really upending the kind of traditional law firm hold on in-house counsel spend and support. That was a fun place to be because it was a company kind of built by lawyers for lawyers, and you know, me coming in without a legal degree with more of a commercial bent, it was fun to come in there and build a commercial engine where it didn't exist. Spent about 9 years there, first in the US and then in the UK. That was a $50 to $250 million run during that time, and ultimately ended in the company being sold to a private equity firm. And they're doing great. They're doing quite well, continuing to dominate their space. A really fun time to be in that industry. When I left there, that's when I had my first chief revenue officer role. A similar business to Axiom, but this time in the tech space, and specifically working with software engineers. And that was a company called Andela. Andela was quite well known because very mission-driven company that was first focused on creating opportunity for young professionals in Africa, training them to become software engineers, and then deploying them at primarily SMB companies here in the US. And today it might be described as a talent marketplace business, but you know, a really great success story and not only creating opportunity, you know, in countries that were often overlooked, but a growth success story as well. Spent 2 years there as the chief revenue officer. It was during COVID. The whole company kind of pivoted its business model during that time. But that was about a $50 to $125 million run, which was great. When I left Andela, I decided I wanted to go, you know, into tech and SaaS in particular. Ended up at a company called Naya in the healthcare space. Naya is a Series C company that focuses on employee benefits and really helping consumers make more informed choices when it comes to choosing their benefits. And they've created a tool that relies on a lot of machine learning and personalized data on the user to help them make what is, for many people, the most important financial decision they make in any given year, choosing their benefits. Spent about 18 months there before ultimately landing at Theropass. And you know, I had been through the SOC 2 experience at Axiom, knew the pain that came with that. I think that's how many people end up in this space. Was connected to the founders there through a fellow UVA grad. Two of the founders are UVA grads as well. Spent time at them over a couple months and just, you know, saw a huge opportunity, you know, in a space that was, you know, growing tremendously. And they were looking to bring in their first chief revenue officer to kind of help drive the next phase of growth from, you know, post their Series C, which happened in November of 22. So I've been there for just over a year and it's been great.
Well, it's, you know, I'm lucky enough to know some of the folks that have come on board through previous work that I've done. So good friends with Dickon, who's a fantastic CFO and just a great human as well. And it was neat seeing that I've had this interesting thing that even in past before here, compliance has always been a background, you know, part of what I did, which is why I was so interested in the ThoroughPath's go-to-market, because what's interesting as an IT person at Raymond James, as an example, here I was, you know, I can say it publicly, of course, because my LinkedIn is open, not hard to guess. I could say a financial services firm based out of the greater Florida area with a large campus. You know, like it's like saying you work at an IT company out of the Pacific Northwest. Microsoft, thanks, right? But I was exposed to the early development of a lot of this stuff and was really tightly bound to a lot of the financial compliance regulations and data protection. And because we were Canadian and US and European, I saw all the complexities of the impact that it had, where compliance was coming from legal. So we have a legal and compliance team, and they're coming to me with their requirements, which then basically are non-functional requirements that I have to turn into functional technology requirements. And this is before these systems existed. Like, we were developing stuff that just never had history. So it was a real challenge to understand how to do it. And often regulatory stuff is gray. It is very hard to see hard. There are certain hard line black and white delineation, like you're compliant or non-compliant. And then there are certain soft compliance pieces that were like sometimes log retention and stuff like that. And then I looked at, suddenly I found myself talking to all these technology companies, and they were really having to struggle with how do they get compliance? Because the cloud was now here. And so now every tech company I'm talking to was racing to try and get SOC 2. And they're struggling because this gap between legal compliance and technology was a human gap. And we were trying to build systems that would connect the dots. But even when we built them, they were human-bound systems. So the moment you were compliant, immediately from that moment forward, you were potentially non-compliant. Compliance is all right, we are compliant at the moment. It's like trying to cross the road. Is it good? I don't know. Look left and right. So the reason I bring that story is just because I struggled knowing who owns this function and the outcome. So that's why when I talk about the science of selling compliance, who do you sell to and who gains the benefit?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. The who you sell to really differs based on the size and frankly just stage of company and maturity and to an extent industry. This whole industry of compliance automation, we'll call it, that ThoroughPath lives in, and it's, you know, new competitors crop up every day. It's pretty wild. It's definitely one of the hottest spaces from an investment perspective. And a lot of that is driven by working with early stage companies. And it used to be that you didn't even think about, you know, compliance, SOC 2 compliance, ISO 27001, whatever it might be, for years, right? And it was generally because maybe a large enterprise business asked about it, hey, send me your SOC 2 report, you know, or you just get to a size where you realize it is important and you hire your first compliance or security focused employee. But, you know, what we've seen over the past few years, and I think, you know, some of this is just, you know, frankly, driven by the industry itself, because they've lowered the entry point, the cost of entry point. we are seeing companies, you know, looking to become SOC 2 compliant, you know, in year one, you know, with five employees. And in these early stage companies, you're generally selling to the founder or CEO, maybe technical co-founder. And in those instances, for the most part, I don't want to say they don't care about compliance, but they're doing it because either an early customer is asking them for it, or they just know what's coming and they're getting ahead of it. Like they're forward thinking. They want to get that SOC 2 report. They don't want it to block them from growth, right? They know it can be a sales enabler. And so they care about it. They want to get that report. They want that stamp on their website, but they're looking for the easy button to do it. And you know, certainly ThreatPass and our competitors are a great, you know, tool for doing that. And again, the cost of getting compliant has come down dramatically, especially compared to a traditional kind of InfoSec audit firm. Now, as you go up market, that buyer changes, right? It's probably a chief information security officer that a company has hired. Maybe it's a VP of compliance. Maybe it's your CTO or VP of Eng. You know, and you know, there are others that may be involved in the decision. There could be a product leader, security focused, a leader. We've had in some cases people in revenue be part of the decision process as you go up market, right? Because they are often on the front lines having to fill out the due diligence questionnaire from a potential customer or have to deliver the SOC 2 report. So you see that, you know, it's a more diverse set of buyers, but it's a more sophisticated set of buyers when it comes to compliance, when it comes to quality, when it comes to ensuring that, you know, you're not just delivering a report, you're not just getting them through their audit, you're actually helping improve their overall, you know, program to, as you alluded to before, you know, stay compliant throughout, you know, their journey with you. And so, you know, that requires a different, you know, sales motion, a different, you know, customer support motion, you know, versus again, the early stage buyer where, you know, it's a slightly, that what they're looking for is just different. I don't want to say simpler, but certainly they're not quite as focused on the kind of the nuts and bolts and kind of, you know, real detail of how you're going to deliver the solution.
Yeah, it's tough those early days. It's a checkbox requirement for RFPs. It's going to be, you know, most, you know, major firms that you're selling to as a B2B are going to say like, yeah, where's, you know, it. And the worst thing is when it sort of sneaks in at the back, you're like, everything's great. We're totally qualified. We're literally at like proposals and like, oh, do us a favor. Can you just fire over your SOC 2? Like,
yeah. No. Oof. Yeah.
And the biggest thing is it is a very distinct challenge of a human technology problem. Not just in getting to, but especially in remaining and staying compliant. Yeah. So what's the oral way? You know, what is the method that you folks have got that, because you do have you have people that have done you actually have basically red teaming, you know, on the back end, because you can go and say, I know as a compliance auditor what we're going to have to hit. And then you've built this fantastic tech stack that can deliver it. So how does this all come together?
Yeah, and we've taken a different approach to the problem, certainly different than the other, you know, tech players, software players in our space, right? The vast majority of players in our space are delivering a software solution to get you what I call audit ready, right? A tool that, you know, allows you to easily gather evidence, put in the appropriate monitors and controls that get you to the point where you should hopefully be able to complete your, well, let's just say in this case, SOC 2 certification. You're then handed off or connected to a third-party auditor who then, you know, runs with the rest of the process to actually complete that audit. And that's fine. That, you know, that is one method for accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish. You know, early on in our founding, we you know, realized that, you know, there's probably a more efficient way to do this. You know, if you know, delivering more of, you know, holistic or what I've called kind of closed loop ecosystem for our customers, where, they never really leave the Oro platform, the ThoroughPass platform. You know, we are providing the software to do those things that I mentioned, gather evidence, to, you know, put in place their monitors and controls. When it comes time to audit, we built a separate and independent audit function, audit firm, that then actually completes the audit evaluation, the audit process. And they only audit ThoroughPass customers. The benefit there is they understand the platform, they understand the policies, they are expert in the Oro way, and it's one point of contact for the customer, you know, throughout their process, right? They're dealing with their customer success manager as we onboard them onto the platform. Then they're introduced to their ThoroughPass auditor, who runs, again, a separate and independent process to complete the audit. But it's all done, you know, inside the ThoroughPass ecosystem. So it's certainly a more efficient process from a contracting and pricing perspective, right? It's a one-stop shop there. There's no, you know, hidden surprises, right? You know, we hear all the time, you know, the software price was quite attractive from a competitor. But then when I was introduced to the auditor, wow, I wasn't expecting that. You know, we're able to provide a lot more transparency right from the start, which I think, you know, it's important, right? Because let's face it, companies don't love spending money on compliance usually. So it's important to be able to give that transparency up front. But I think, again, more importantly, it's staying inside one ecosystem, it's a more efficient process when it comes to the back and forth between the auditor and the customer, staying inside the ThoroughPass platform. So, you know, it was a big decision to build that, right? It's not easy to build a services business, right? You know, inside a tech company. And that's, you know, that's what we did. It took, you know, many years to do that and to stand that up. And there are lots of trade-offs that come with that from a cost perspective, for sure. But, you know, again, we continue to believe it is the right way. It is, I think, we think it will, others will follow soon with this process, because, you know, we hear from our customers time and time again, the quality of service that they get, you know, staying inside of the ThoroughPass ecosystem is above and beyond what they've been used to, you know, especially if we won their business from, you know, either a similar competitor or a more traditional, you know, audit firm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess this is it's always an interesting thing about what is the chicken egg in the inception of the problem statement. And the best problem statement is one that was lived, you know, so having lived experience and being people that do the function, when you're building the software and the processes, you're much more in tune to the actual requirements of the consumer of the output, which is really kind of the problem. And what we see often is that, like you said, we can do compliance and we have relative trust in software saying, yeah, you're compliant, but audits change, processes change, things change. And it's like not having the consultative access and being purely software feels risky to me as a business owner of like, I need to make sure that, like, I've got an accountant and I've got a bookkeeper. And so they each have specific functions and I can't do one without the other. And I need each of them to check each other to make sure they're still alive and doing the right thing. And it's sort of the same thing. If I just had the accountant, to be great, but who's doing the bookkeeping, right? It's a different science that's there. And what I want to have a question around is, how do we make people value compliance? Because it's binary. Yeah. You're compliant or non-compliant. So how do you create a tangible measure of value?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly one of the more tangible ways is measuring the revenue impact that getting compliant has delivered, certainly for early stage companies, right? We hear it time again, you know, because we were able to get SOC 2 compliant with, you know, ThoroughPass or one of our competitors, we were able to win that big enterprise deal, right? That really changed the trajectory of the company, or, you know, multiple deals. That certainly is one of the more, you know, measurable impacts of getting compliant. But on the other side, and you know, we've actually been talking with some of our partners about this, you know, there are other frameworks, you know, beyond SOC 2, right? We one of the biggest drivers of growth for us right now is supporting health tech companies to become HITRUST compliant, right? Which is, you know, HIPAA is kind of the, you know, what most healthcare companies start with, but HIPAA is a self-attestation. Many don't know that. There's no independent audit of being.
Right.
I think a lot of
most people don't know how to spell HIPAA. That's the biggest problem. You know, how many times I see that on Twitter, I'm like, oh no, not again.
Well, it's funny, you talk to people about that, you're like, wow, so my patient data, all the protections are being, you know, governed by the organization's kind of, you know, self-certification of HIPAA. Like, yeah, that's how it works. But HITRUST requires an independent assessment and much tighter controls. And we're, you know, we've been talking with partners like HITRUST and others around, you know, data of you know, what breaches and other kind of data loss numbers look like for customers or companies who are, in this case, HITRUST compliant versus those that are not. And you certainly see the same with some of the other frameworks. So there is a, you know, I don't know if ROI is the right word, but there's certainly, you know, a really strong business case just from a data protection perspective to, you know, pursue at the very least SOC 2 or ISO in Europe. And then again, if you're in industries like health tech or even outside of health tech, you know, frameworks like HITRUST in financial services, PCI, of course, is mandatory for protecting credit information. And you see time and time again, quite often where companies are breached or have, you know, data loss, you then dig in and be like, oh, wow, you know, they weren't compliant with a certain framework, or, you know, the policies for maintaining compliance were fairly weak.
Yeah. And I guess this is it's always one of those things where we look at where's revenue driving from, and rarely would be like compliance. You know, like this is why it's, an interesting both sort of science and magic of selling value. Like, there is a clear tangible value when you map it out, but it's not prevalent. It's like not obvious every day, which is why I was so interested in this problem of like compliance as a part of the story, especially for technology firms. Like, if we say there's compliance capabilities inside it, immediately people light up. They're like, what? That, like, it, you know, they didn't ask you about it, but when you include it, they're like, oh, this is like a super bonus. Because compliance, just like a lot of security functions, aren't front of mind necessarily with developers and product managers. It's like, at launch, let's just make sure we check the checkbox.
Yeah, and I mean, the signal value alone is huge, right? It you know, and I think, again, you're going to more and more with enterprise buyers and even further down market, even mid-market and some SMB, you know, they're going to want to know they're doing business with a customer that takes this seriously, that's going to protect their data. And you know, it's table stakes now, quite frankly. Like, if you're at a, you know, an early stage company and are not SOC 2 compliant at the very least, you know, good luck trying to win business with any customer of any size. It's almost, you are an outlier if you're not doing this already.
And that's really, we have this classic, you know, why does this need to happen? Why us? Why now? And, you know, obviously looking at the why, I've lived this environment. It's pretty simple. You have a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders and to your clients in order to deliver an absolute compliant capability for whatever you do, service, software, whatever it is, compliance. It's a requirement, whether we believe it is or not. It may be a gray checkbox, but it's a checkbox just the same. And then, do you want to build capabilities in your early stage company around managing this? Wow, does that ever see like the bottom of the ladder for my first hires? And so this is why the timing of it is really fantastic, because I need this, but I don't need to be good at it. And then from there, the fact that when you say the why us in the middle of that is because you understand the technology requirements, but you also understand the business integration requirements, where it's going to tie in. And also these are moving. The frameworks may be standard, but the ways in which we enforce them and maintain compliance is always moving, just because the technology is changing.
Yeah.
We add traditional databases to vectorized databases. A new landscape problem. You know, people have customer data that's then being used and shared that's not stored in a traditional structured data format. Real, real problem now where even if you were good at that thing, you just acquired a new capability that means a compliance story is fundamentally different.
Yep. Yeah. And obviously every time you onboard a new employee, you know, that's risk.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the compliance responsibility is a daily task.
And I guess that's a question I would love as well. How do you maintain stickiness in the company? Because sometimes people think of like framework compliance as like, you know, each year we'll take a look at it. But I would see, like, obviously we're already knowing that this is not a temporary framework, you know, checkbox. This is people will recheck continuously. And more than just being compliant, like people have to genuinely live this life because there are breaches. There are all these things all the time. In the security world, we've basically said, assume breach has occurred. What's mitigation beyond the breach? And so then you have to sort of apply the same thing to this level of compliance of like, assume that we could be out of line. How do we know where we are and how do we get back to compliance? And without visibility, without a platform approach, you have to do a mini internal audit, which is terrifying. Like it's, and no one will do it. They'll just be like, we'll put it in the backlog after the company lunch.
Yeah.
So yeah. who's your customer as like an ideal profile for you? You talked about early stage startups and, you know, especially folks that are even pre-revenue sometimes are probably coming to you saying like, hey, we need to be ready for this or know how to get it going fast when we hit those first few clients.
Yeah. I mean, the company certainly was built upon, you know, serving those, again, getting compliant for the first time customers. And that is a very large part of our customer base. And I think, you know, will continue to be for, you know, for many years to come. That said, our focus more recently has been, you know, looking up market to the customers that sure are bigger, but actually truly care and value compliance. Then it's not just a revenue enabler. They actually care about the protection and security of their own data and their customers' data. And you know, the way in which we deliver the solution, the pairing of software with the audit capability, is really attractive to them. In addition, as you go up market, you often see this is where companies will tend to pursue additional frameworks, right? They might start with SOC 2 and then they are going into Europe, so they'll add ISO, or if they're in healthcare, as I mentioned before, they'll add HITRUST or financial services, PCI. And in those instances, you know, what you often hear time and time again from customers is, I just feel like I'm always being audited, right? I'm doing SOC 2 and finishing SOC 2. And then, you know, from there, I have to start my ISO audit and then, you know, so on and so on. And it's, you know, it can be exhausting. And so
PTSD, just remembering all of this. I lived that in fintech.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for, you know, really large, you know, enterprises, it is truly a year-round challenge. But, you know, what you often find is there are a lot of controls that can be applied to multiple frameworks. And so our big focus this year has been, you know, how do you build a platform where, you know, one control can be applied to multiple frameworks? And as such, can you complete multiple frameworks under one audit? And we're starting to deliver that for our customers where they say, hey, you know, the audit might be longer as a result, but at the end result, we can help you achieve your SOC 2 plus insert framework here. And that's been a really exciting, you know, prospect, not just for us, but for our customers who are looking for more efficiency in this process. And that, you know, again, has played well and certainly more, you know, attractive to the quote unquote upmarket buyer where, you know, again, they care about security, they care about compliance, and they are pursuing, you know, multiple frameworks, you know, in a given year. The ability to achieve those under one audit cycle is huge.
For sure. And I lived that of literally going through a full audit for one particular framework. And then right on the heels of that, I'm like, am I just doing the same questionnaire? 60, 70% of it was same core fundamentals. And then there was the outline bits that were specific to that framework requirement. And it was wild because I'm like, this is brutal because you can't just like copy paste because it's like close, but not quite. And so just the efficiency plus the idea that I worked in business continuity. And one of the things we did with disaster recovery and business continuity is the number one rule is test the plan, don't plan the test. Because what you have to have is you have to have a continuous operational framework that is ready for disaster. And so that when disaster strikes, you simply turn on the machine. And it could be, there's a lot of manual steps in that machine, but we should just know where we need to be in a programmatic, systematized way. And same with compliance, I never got that. It was always just like, okay, folks, here's your 270 cell Excel spreadsheet you got to fill out for the auditor.
Grab this screenshot, grab this Excel spreadsheet. You know, it's a nightmare.
So like for me, I'm like, why, where were you when I was living this life, Brian? I would have been client one for you 100%.
I could take no credit for coming up with the solution, but yeah, we will. If we had a time machine, we could go back and help.
Now let's talk about your role in ThoroughPass and coming from your background too. Yeah. I hear a lot of 52. So you definitely have a sweet spot where you tend to arrive at a firm, and obviously that tends to align very much with the, like, you've got a playbook that you've built that you're bringing to the table. So what specializes you in the sort of your growth, because also CRO, COO, CMO, chief business officer, we get different descriptions of it. So I'd love to hear about how you would describe a CRO at ThoroughPass.
Yeah.
Relative to, you know, how you've maybe done it in the past with other firms.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the common threads for my past few stops, my past few CRO instances in particular, was, you know, helping an organization move up market. And, you know, I had the privilege of starting my career in an enterprise business, you know, CEB almost exclusively sold to, you know, Fortune 500, Global 1000 companies. And so you just learn the art and science of selling to, you know, fairly sophisticated buyers at large global enterprises. Axiom was the same. And then we built an SMB business later, which was, you know, normally it doesn't work that way, but that was a great learning experience. So, you know, as I think about my last three stops, Andela, Naya, now ThoroughPass, there was certainly a common trend there, but okay, we've got some things that are working here. You know, we have some product market fit. We've certainly figured out how to sell to the early stage buyer. But I think, like many companies that start their journey there, you know, early stage buyers are easier to sell to. They're hard to keep, right? I mean, they churn for a variety of reasons. I mean, you know, certainly in more recent years, they go out of business, right? Venture funding dries up. You know, SVP goes bust. So all of a sudden, you know, the venture markets dry up, and these companies don't exist. You know, in the compliance world, they pivot their roadmap, they pivot their focus. They no longer, you know, need to be compliant in whatever they're pursuing. You know, or they just deprioritize it. So there, you know, there's a variety of reasons why an SMB customer it's a really challenging one to continue to build upon. So again, you know, many organizations start to turn their attention up market. Now that is easier said than done because it is a very different sales motion. It takes a different profile of seller. It takes a different profile of customer support person. Your product obviously needs to evolve to the needs as well. And, you know, I think what I've experienced at the organization I've been at is, you know, especially leaders that haven't worked up market, kind of always underestimate the pivot and how long it takes.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just hiring an enterprise salesperson. That's part of it.
Yeah.
But it is a, you have to think about the complete customer life cycle to, you know, actually not just, you know, sell at market, but deliver and retain. Because the stakes are higher. You still have that same propensity to churn, but it's not because they're going out of business. It's because you didn't deliver. And the revenue impact to your company obviously is much bigger when one enterprise customer churns versus one SMB. And the reputational risk is huge. And so, you know, I really enjoy being helping to drive that move up market, because, you know, having been through it and learning in that type of environment, you know, I know what the payoff is down the road. But I always, you know, preach a bit of patience, you know, in the orgs that I join, because it is not an overnight success, and you need to be fully in it, right? It's not a dip your toe in the water decision to move up market. It is something that the whole organization has to be committed to. And, you know, obviously, and you want to try to do that without, you know, sacrificing or ignoring what made you great and what got you there. And I think, you know, we're doing a pretty good job of that so far here at Theralpass. So, you know, in my first year, that has been a big part of my focus, has been building that upmarket sales motion, the marketing support that goes with that, and building the partnerships ecosystem as well that can help deliver, you know, the upmarket buyer, because quite similar to what I said before about an enterprise seller, you know, the partners that you work with are going to be different when you go upmarket, and the way in which you market to them is going to be different, right? Less Google, you know, PPC, and more, event driven or account based marketing driven. So the whole motion looks different. So that's, you know, I call it phase one. And then, you know, the follow on is, how do we support them, right? And that's where I've been starting to turn my attention more recently is, you know, do we have the right infrastructure and support to, you know, deliver upon the promises that we're making in the sales motion?
It's a really tough thing to explain to people, the reality of what it takes to support if it works so that it can work, right? And like you said, it seems like, it's just a slightly different, maybe longer sales cycle, completely fundamentally different. The CAC is different. CLTVs are different. The way you do retention, the style of relationship selling, and the likelihood that it's going to be partner-led as well. But then that also introduces the immediate next challenge of, like, how do you have a strong inside and outside sales, but then also light up a channel ecosystem where you can reward them to participate, but then not evacuate your internal sales team who now is like, I've been talking to this account for 6 months. We're like, but they're already attached to a partner, and then they can walk us in there today. And by the way, it's going to take 18 points off your commission. You're like, oh, like but if they see the longer term of it, the retention with a channel-led customer is likely longer if you're well integrated in the channel ecosystem, like in how they operate their account management. But like you said, I mean, ABM is a classic. People are like, you know what? We're going to move to ABM as a strategy. I'm like, fantastic. So we're going to completely redesign the website, every piece of material, our whole sales motion, our funnels, everything. They're like, no. ABM just means that we tag them in HubSpot or Salesforce. I'm like, no, that's not what it means at all.
Yeah. That, were you in some of my recent sounds like you were.
It's tough, because that is a real chicken egg problem as well. It's like, you have to move towards strategy, and you know, find me a company that says they're 100% channel led in year six. I'm like, you are 4% channel led right now, and the transition is going to be difficult for your revenue. And that's a tough one to also understand for people, is that, like, say, moving from perpetual to, you know, money to move or net recurring revenue. Like, that was a big change. And the cash required to maintain the transition of those clients is difficult. It's really scary.
It really is. And the amount of times I've said leap of faith in the past year is more than I said in the previous 10, but it's true. It's, you know, And moving up market, you know, building a partnerships ecosystem, investing in brand, right? All things that, you know, building and hiring, you know, upmarket sellers, all, you know, expensive investments that don't have an immediate return, you know, really hard for, and, you know, a somewhat early stage, you know, we've been around for about 5 years, venture-backed company that obviously still is looking to hit quarterly targets while keeping an eye on future growth. It is a really tough balance, and, you know, it's understandable when folks around the table are saying, like, that's a lot of money. When are we going to see the return on this investment?
You
need that kind of collective trust amongst one another and, you know, collective belief that it will work. Because if there are folks that are not fully bought in, it gets really, really hard.
And it's tough to show going back. This is the one thing with so many platforms where you can become somewhat invisible in that it just works. And that's kind of the idea. We pitch a lot of ideas and products as like, hey, once you turn it on, like, that's it. We're going to maintain you. And then they go, great. But then it's tough for them in at renewal to see the ROI in year two, year three. And then all of a sudden you find yourself, because you're successful in market, people then begin to look and say, hey, what if we look at somebody else who's going to give us a wicked deal and they can do some other thing? And then now they're shopping around for this year's budget best spent, and they don't necessarily see the return coming from an incumbent platform. So as an incumbent, you're actually at risk. It's like the David versus Goliath thing. Goliath was always in trouble.
Yeah, completely.
So what do you do when you're building these ecosystems out, Brian? Like, how do you make it through the transition as you change the way a team works, but keep them interested, because the reward cycles are longer? And so it's kind of like watching a maturation of as a teenager, where they have to grow patience and certain things. So you're bringing a sales team that's existing, that they've got a machine, they like how it works. How do we bring them to, you got to believe us, it's going to be well worth it on your W-2 for sure, but trust us along the way.
Well, as soon as you can, I mean, and this is not necessarily rocket science, but specialization and segmentation as early as possible. You know, I think before I arrived at ThoroughPass, we were trying to sell all things to all customers from the same team. And not surprisingly, that's just really hard. And, you know, we made the decision about a year ago to start first by segmenting and specializing a bit inside the sales organization. You know, just first, very simple, a mid-market sales team and an SMB sales team. And we, after that, went to some industry specialization. And, you know, but you have to do that. You can't do that in a vacuum, right? You need to see similar specialization, you know, within your marketing organization and then within your partnerships. And then, of course, you know, once they're customers, within your customer org. But once you do that, and once we did that here, you know, you can then start to have, you know, different KPIs and different measures of success and different targets that, you know, are in line with the right, you know, relative maturity, you know, of that segment and of that team, right? I mean, we're not going to goal our mid-market sales team, you know, on the same growth number or same cost of sales number as the maybe the SMB sales team right now. And that will obviously change and pivot over time. You know, one thing I haven't mentioned is, you know, to do this really effectively, you obviously have a pretty strong RevOps function. And, you know, I've been quite lucky that they invested in a RevOps function at ThoroughPass before I got here. Not huge, but a really effective team that, you know, can, you know, put in place, you know, all of the, you know, tracking and segmentation and reporting, you know, within Salesforce and the other BI tools that we use, you know, to enable you to, you know, track the effectiveness and relative performance, you know, at the customer segment level, at the industry level, you know, et cetera. So, you know, the leap of faith is a little bit easier when you can, you know, separate out, you know, and the relative performance of distinct teams selling into, you know, different customer segments, you know, and different industries. You still need that kind of patience in the new markets that you're entering into, but I think you can accelerate your success or failure, you know, by doing so versus the kind of one size fits all approach, which is really, really challenging.
Now, the one I'd like to learn about is how you cross the human chasm on the champion user side for this, because although ThoroughPass, obviously there's likely the ownership and budget's going to be coming out of a different, like, a legal compliance org. Typically, it may be under a CIO's coverage because it's related to operations and cloud ops, et cetera. But it's the renewals are likely going to be handled by legal and compliance because that's more their function. They need to know that this is in place. But you have to understand the technology user who's going to be feeding this, building the systems that will feed the results that will keep them, you know, compliant through what you and the team are doing. So how do you map and, like, speak to all these varied personas?
Yeah. Yeah. We've been learning a lot, you know, the past year, especially as we go up market on how to navigate, you know, the sale or the renewal. Cause you're right. We've had a number of opportunities where we had a really strong champion, you know, whether that's the CISO or an external consultant that they brought in to build out their compliance program, a VP of compliance, and we're introduced to the influencers in the opportunity, you know, and quite often, you know, a CIO or a VP of Eng, legal, and, you know, despite winning over that champion, having budget approval and checking, you know, many of the boxes, you know, they killed the deal because, you know, there's one product feature maybe that they were looking for that you don't have, or there's something about an integration with one of their, you know, core systems that, you know, maybe doesn't meet their requirement. And so, you know, we've learned along the way, you know, in this, you know, upmarket buyer, getting time and introduced to the influencers early in the process is really important, right? You know, we always talk about not having happy years in the sales process, right? Just because your champion says, yes, I want to move forward with you. If you haven't mapped out, you know, all of the stakeholders here, especially for a solution like this, that, you know, it is going to have a wide variety of individuals involved in either utilizing the platform or being part of the audit, you know, or certainly just, you know, reaping the benefits of achieving that framework. It's really, you know, really important to understand all of the players early on and understand what's going to be important to them, and running to those objections early on and attacking them and obviously seeing if we can overcome them, you know, versus, you know, getting to towards the end of the sales process and obviously learning at that point, like, who else needs to be a part of this decision. So, and I think that comes too with, you know, experience, right? You know, I think I found that, you know, some of our sellers that have been earlier in their career haven't experienced this or are just afraid sometimes to ask those questions that they may not want the answer to. They kind of avoid them and hope, you know, cross your fingers, close your eyes, that you're still going to get that deal over the line, you know, and, you know, but you experience a couple losses, you won't make that mistake again. And again, our, you know, more experienced sellers that we've brought in, they get that and they get ahead of those objections early on. But it is a challenging, you know, sale, you know, because of the wide variety of stakeholders that are involved. Other places, it's usually been the decision maker and someone from procurement, the decision maker and somebody from legal. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, here you have, you know, the CISO and maybe their team. You do have somebody from engineering or IT. You probably have someone from legal or, you know, procurement. You know, if they have a risk function, they're involved. So it is a wide variety of stakeholders who have skin in the game here. And you know, you've got to make sure you understand their differing needs and requirements.
Well, which highlights the complexity of trying to do it on your own. Like if somebody was trying to do this and just winging it, hoping they can hit all these functions internally with open source software and hope, you know, it's just not capable to be done at the scale of anybody and the speed that we need. Like I said, nowadays, if you go to acquire.com and there's SaaS products that are launching by the minute. But if they don't have that compliance, then they are in real, you know, hurry up and wait for a client opportunity, because it's just, like you said, it's table stakes. Yep. And I look at this as like, even just having your security stance and position in a PDF was like a bold thing to do for most companies. So like, just wait till they ask and then we'll run the audit with them. It's like, no, you have to go to the market saying we're ready. We can hit the ground running. We've got these compliance, you know, check boxes and we're ready. You know, like, because yeah. Without that, it's just the same as any feature. When someone says, hey, do you support X? You're like, yeah, no, it's coming next quarter. Tell you what, you come back in 2 quarters once it's working and proven, and then I'll talk to you again. You're like, I can't be in a waiting game for, I hope it's coming next quarter. Cause I know what it takes to go through those. It is very easy to get tripped up by small things that require wait periods, reconfirmation, like reassessments. This is not one and done. You know, you're going to get a visit from Anderson or whatever, you know, generic consulting company is going to come pouring in like, yeah, you're good. You know, an hour in and out in a meeting room. Like, no, it's a really gnarly process.
Yeah, completely.
What do you see that excited you about the ThoroughPass opportunity?
A couple things. You know, as I alluded to earlier, I've always been attracted to companies where the TAM, the market, seems to be growing. And this market is growing, you know, for a variety of reasons. You know, one, you know, companies, you know, realizing they need to be compliant earlier and earlier in their journey, right? Two, you have new frameworks that come online every so often. I mean, certainly right now, the big focus is on AI and how you can provide some level of security and compliance for utilizing AI in your product. And we've been trying to pin on the forefront of that. And then this just, you know, utilization or implementation of technology to, you know, make the audit process more efficient is, you know, for the early stage company, they're like, yeah, this is just how you do it, right? But, you know, when you talk to your larger upmarket companies who have been using traditional, you know, audit firms, InfoSec audit firms, it's funny, they're like, oh my gosh, wow, I didn't realize you could do it this way, and it's half the cost or a third of the cost, whatever it might be. So just the market opportunity, you know, was really just felt big and growing for a number of different dimensions, right? They were going to continue to drive that growth. Now, the downside is, you know, with really strong product market fit, it is super competitive. I mean, probably the most competitive industry I have been in. Every deal we are in has at least one, if not two or three competitors on it, but it keeps you sharp. And certainly validates that it's, you know, a qualified buyer. But the market opportunity was huge. On a selfish level, I'm based here in New York, in Brooklyn. ThoroughPass is a New York centric company, I'll call it, headquartered in New York, although, you know, employees all over the US, Latin America, and Europe. But it was important to me to be in a company where I could be in the office a couple of days a week. I get a lot of energy from being side by side with my team.
Yeah.
We certainly want to make sure that our remote employees feel just as connected. But, you know, for me, it was important to have that opportunity to be side by side a couple of days a week. So that was exciting. You know, and the founder's vision, right? What I love about ThoroughPass is we have a combination of subject matter expertise in our founding team and technical expertise. So our COO, Eva, you know, led compliance at one of Citigroup's biggest divisions for 25 plus years, right? She has walked in the shoes of our customers, you know, for many years. And that, you know, that you feel that in the product, you feel that in the audit experience, and hopefully our customers feel that in the support, right? That was really important. A lot of our competitors don't have that expertise, you know, in their founding team or in their C-level. And then our other two co-founders, Sam and Austin, you know, come more from the traditional SaaS background. They felt the pain of having to get SOC 2 compliant for the first time. So they, you know, aim to deliver a product and solution to make it easier for founders like themselves. So that was a really unique combo of, you know, technical and software expertise and compliance expertise that, you know, I thought would be powerful, and certainly I've experienced that in the time here. And then that, you know, the opportunity to, you know, where they were size and stage, right? They had figured a lot out, but had more to still figure out as they looked to go up market and grow. And I felt that was where I'd often thrive and had a great impact. So, you know, there's a longer list beyond that, but certainly those things really jumped out at me.
And the market position. And obviously your customer list is fantastic. Like you're proving yourselves out in the market clearly. But beyond that, it's just the idea that you've solved multiple problems, which each and of themselves are very complex challenges to solve. You're solving a software stack challenge in order to help people to not only get and maintain compliance, but do it with speed and accuracy and trust. So building the software stack to enable and empower that is representative of real, true, active, people-driven consulting in order to do auditing and be audit ready and audit passed and truly compliant. So you're able to see both sides of it and then bring those together with the team competencies that are split. I mean, God bless the fine folks that are coming out of Silicon Valley, but if I see somebody that's 21 years old coming out with an AI-based product that's going to get you SOC 2 compliance, this person's probably never even been through a tax return, let alone an audit. So I don't know that I'm going to lean in. Like the team experience and the consultative side is such a differentiator that I think your potential to accelerate and continue to maintain that pace of acceleration and velocity is better because you've got both sides of that firm are active at all times.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
Uh-huh. It's a rarity. I'm team Therapist. I mean, I'm just excited as hell. Like I'm like, what jobs you got open? I'm unemployable now. I've got my own company, but I'm greatly attracted to people that are differentiated and companies that are differentiated. And it was just so quick and obvious to me where the opportunity is. That being said, the idea and the execution are lining up, which is also congratulations, because that's easy to come up with this idea. And that's why there's multiple names that you're going to get asked as objections, like, how are you better than X? Like, we can show you what we can do. We can show our differentiation.
We love, I mean, when prospects ask us that or customers ask us that, we run to that question. I love that question because I think it really gives us a chance to shine. It shows us they've done some homework, and I can't say we always win, but we do more often than not. And, you know, we love talking about the Oro way and why the way we deliver this solution, we believe is the future, and, you know, others will follow suit.
And one thing to close up, Brian, I could share and learn a lesson from you all day long. How do you maintain humility like you have? You're a special person in the way that you approach this problem. Most CROs would have to be 4 feet back from the mic because they're yelling so loud. You can hear it. Like there is a personality that's often attached to the CRO function. You have such a beautiful understanding of a we impact both internally and on the customer's side. What brought you to being a successful CRO, but doing so in a way that is not typical of somebody that would be in that high growth sales function?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I think I started my career serving customers, right? My first commercial role was, you know, as an account manager at CEB. And that, it taught me that, you know, how to understand customer pain, number one, but also taught me that the opportunity to serve customers is not just a privilege, but is fleeting. And you know, it's quite easy, just as easy it is to win a customer, it's just as easy to lose a customer, right? So I think I learned early on to never get, you know, too confident or over your skis in terms of how you're doing and you know, the value that you're delivering for customers. So that's number one. Number two, you know, having then spent the bulk of my career in sales, I mean, it is freaking hard. And you can be top of the chart. Yeah, you can be number one quarter, and then next quarter, you're number 10 or number 20, right? It is nothing, you take nothing for granted. This is, it is a grind. And you know, I never, you know, we just finished the strongest quarter in company history, but, you know, I'm already worried about the next quarter, right? Because you can just never, you never know. There is so much that is out of your control. Yeah, you have to just keep focused on the fundamentals, and you know, I always say a little bit of healthy anxiety is a powerful tool for a sales leader. And then third, you know, I have three young dudes here at home, ages 7 to 15, and they remind me just how uncool I am every day. So that keeps me very very humble. I'm very mid, as they say. So
that's it.
That mostly keeps me humble.
Yeah, that is always the fun of realizing we became our dads at some point, whether we meant to. We tried to be cool dads, but no, we're still not cool enough because the kids became cooler. And yeah, we moved to mid status. And if you're lucky and you're not just a little sus, so many things that we learn. Yeah, this is, look, thank you so much. You know, Brian.
Yeah, really, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This was fantastic. I kind of pulled on the sales thread because that it is very interesting to me. Like, obviously technologically what you and the team are doing is really spot on, but like this is a tough gap, which is why there will be competitors in the space, but I see you as definitely creating and leading this category because of the market approach and the team approach and how you built the foundation. It's hard to layer that on at the end. If it's born of that foundation, then everything you do is born of the fundamentals of the purpose of the company. And if that purpose then has a technological side and a human delivery side, like it's just it unbeatable if the foot is on the gas and the fuel is in the tank and all the other things align, which is, as you said, it's fleeting, but the machine is built for performance. We just got to take it to the next level.
Right. That's what we're trying to do.
Awesome. Well, Brian, for folks that do want to get in touch with you and the ThoroughPass team, of course, we'll have links to ThoroughPass in the show notes. How's best to get connected with you?
LinkedIn is always great. You can always email me directly as well. I have both of my names are spelled incorrectly, as most people will tell me. Brian.Kaplan, Brian with a Y, Kaplan with a C, at ThoroughPass.com. So email or LinkedIn is great.
It's like you get those things like those funny misspellings that people have on their Starbucks coffee, like Brian with a Y, and it comes out and says, Why Brian? I'm going to seed our next topic because I want to bring you back and I want to talk about Pavilion. I didn't want to talk about it today because I didn't want to dabble with it, but let's chat more because this is a fantastic thing that is worthy of definitely a full hour onto itself because you do much more. And that's why your humility jumps out as so important is that you are very community and human focused and seeing what I saw at the first pass on what's happening with Pavilion is very interesting. So I want to find out more and get involved myself as well, because this is anything that we can do to grow human capability and empower more people to do great things is pretty awesome. So I look forward to learning about that.
Be my pleasure.
I hate to tease at the end of a show like that. Like, and we now I have to. We're committed now. I have to set up the next time.
Get it in the calendar.
Right on, Brian. Thank you very much. And folks, of course, do check it out. It's ThoroughPass.com. ThroughPass.com. It's the Oro way, which I love. That that's like the marketing team does a fantastic job. The story comes across great, and looking forward to hearing much more.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much, Eric.